Tanuta's Deli.
When the summer came, you were not around. Now the summer's gone.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that focuses on the concerns in the Tri-County area. It's hosted by Jane Herring, Marcia Connett, Joan Rory, and Ron Purty. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 32-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's host.
Hello, and welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring. We get many requests from area nonprofits for financial support, right? Kenosha has a community foundation that can offer another way to support the nonprofit organization or many organizations that you might want to support. Amy Grile, Executive Director, and Marianne Bothy, Communications Manager, are here today to talk about the work of the Kenosha Community Foundation. Welcome. So I think a lot of people know Kenosha Community Foundation, and they most often hear about it when grants are announced every year. But what I have found is that I make certain assumptions about different organizations based on just the snippets that I hear about it, and I'm pleasantly surprised to learn a whole lot more. So, you know, Amy, if you can begin with kind of that elevator speech of what really is the Kenosha Community Foundation?
Sure. We're nearly 100 years old, so we are a very long-term established nonprofit charity here. We manage private wealth for public good. So this is not a government-funded organization. This is all personal wealth that has come to us through families and, you know, those seeking to leave a legacy right here locally in Kenosha. We invest those dollars, and then we use them to issue grants and scholarships throughout the year. So, yeah, we have about $17 million invested currently, and we use about 5% of that to issue grants and scholarships annually to really spur innovation and good work throughout Kenosha, the greater Kenosha community.
And I think that's what's kind of interesting. People say, oh, you've got $17 million in the bank. Let's talk about that investment portion of it and why that's so important to have that huge foundation for the foundation.
Sure. So we use the interest earned off the original establishing gifts, if you will, to determine basically what we can issue as grants and scholarships. We really do anticipate market growth about 7% average across 100 years history. We can see we average, you know, 7 to 8% on our investments. So when we can give 5% out as grants and scholarships, we can retain a little of those earnings as well. And certainly we've had some good market years so as of late. So when we earn 25% on our investment pool, we can certainly grow all of the component funds that we can talk about later. But each of our donors hosts an individual fund, even though all the dollars are pooled. We can slowly increase the value of each of the component funds and for perpetuity ensure that we can issue grants and scholarships out of those funds, if that makes sense.
It does. And I know I want to get into greater detail about the grants and the funds, but I'm still a little bit interested in this whole investment piece. Does each fund, I think what you just said is you pool all of these funds, but your accounting is separate. So do you have one investment plan overall for the organization?
Right, really good question. So if the donor, the given donor, would say be very interested in having an alternative investment strategy or wanted to be more prudent, for example, than what we are already. We are extremely prudent with our investments, but nonetheless, we could create separate investment vehicles, if you will. But we find that pooling the vast majority of our assets really does allow us to take advantage of those economies of scale, lower the fees for our investment, and generally we retain more of the value right here with our organization. So yeah, it's kind of a both and. We can do it in our pool, which is a 60-40 split. Generally, we go by a 60% stock mix and a 40% bond mix, which is generally the standard across community foundations, just to ensure that we have a stable approach and very prudent management of the funds.
In my very simplistic view toward the foundation, there's the money in, money out, and what happens to the money once it's in. And we've been talking about really that middle investment piece as to how you're growing the funds that are contributed to you so that you can then issue 5% of what you have to grants to support the community. So I'd like to spend a fair amount of time now talking about the different ways that you do support community. When we spoke briefly on the phone yesterday, I guess I was surprised by, major categories as well as minor ones. So first of all, and I think, I don't know if this is you, Amy, or if it's Marian who would address this about the which grants and funds are out there.
Sure. So I'll hand this off to Marian, but essentially we have different cycles, and some are competitive grant cycles where we accept many applications. Others are what we call designated funds, so we issue grants based on the donor intent. But because Marian does so much of the administration day-to-day of the grants, I'll hand it off to her if she'd like to talk a little bit about her role.
Yes, thanks, Amy. Like Amy said, we do have a few different types of grants that we give out to nonprofit organizations in the community, and they're basically divided into two sort of categories: unrestricted, which are comprised of a pool of funds that have been donated. Money has been donated to the foundation, and the donors have entrusted our board of directors and the staff to administer applications for these grants and then disperse them based on areas of need that we see within the community. So the donors are basically entrusting us with, you know, their endowments to make the decision on where the fund should be granted. And the other type of fund that we manage, or the other type of grant funds that we manage, are called field of interest funds. And those funds, the donors are specifically designating the funds to go to certain issues that align with their values and their interests. And so we see, right now we have about five different funds, six total, but we have five funds that are comprised of our field of interest grant cycle. And then one fund, the CBK fund, which is currently open now. The application is open for that right now. And that one is kind of administered outside of the other field of interest cycle, if that makes sense. I'm not sure if I'm explaining that well, but...
Yeah. So it's not the same group of five funds. It's kind of its own thing and then separately. Okay.
Yes, that's right.
So what are the other the five field of interest funds? What are they interested in?
Sure. So we have our newest fund to join our family of funds at the KCF is the ANVK Field of Interest Endowment Fund. And that fund supports services for elderly or disabled residents of Kenosha, particularly individuals that are homebound. And the goal of that fund is to enhance a person's health and safety and to assist them to live and remain in their home. So that is the newest fund that was just started last year, and it gave out its first grants in 2024. And then besides that one, we also have the Kenosha Arts Fund, which supports projects that enhance Kenosha's culture, economy, and quality of life and impact the arts and community at large. That fund is well known in our community for hosting the Harbor Park Sculpture Walk exhibit, which just recently, unveiled its newest exhibit. So there's some new sculptures that have been installed along the lakefront. And that
they look really cool too.
Yeah, through the Kenosha Arts Fund. And that project actually was created by the committee, the Arts Fund Committee, to support the Arts Fund. And then with any of the extra money that project brings in, they put it into the Arts Fund, and then that money is invested and then given out as grants through the Arts Fund's Field of Interest grant. So that's one unique one. We also have the OMC Legacy Fund that supports programs and activities to improve the general welfare and enhance the quality of life for youth in Kenosha. We also have the LaFave Family Fund that supports further education and promotes humanities and the arts, tolerance and communication in Kenosha County. And then the Women's Fund is the final fund in our field of interest grant cycle that supports programs and organizations that create opportunities for women and children.
Okay. And you said that those five funds are kind of on the same granting cycle for nonprofits to apply to receive some of those funds.
Exactly, yes. And yes, our field of interest grants, that cycle is usually a summer cycle. We have a date set tentatively for June 2nd for that to open up for interested applicants. And they are all open. The application for all of those is open at the same time, and all of the applications are reviewed by our Field of Interest Grant Review Committee. And then are all reviewed by the board. The recommendations from the committee are reviewed by the board, and then they're all granted at the same time. So this is a little bit different than the way the CBK small grant program is administered. That has a separate review committee, and that's why that cycle is different than the other field of interest fund grants.
So is that the, when you said the other, remind me of the other name that's not the field of interest.
Unrestricted.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's truly unrestricted in terms of the donor side, or on the recipient side, are there certain, requirements of the types of programs that they have to have? I would imagine you request a lot on the application.
Yes, yes. These unrestricted grants were actually designed to serve the community's ever-changing needs. So I think it is really a unique vehicle for donors specifically who, have various interests and values that they see represented through the KCF, but don't necessarily want to pin down a certain field or service area of organizations. You're right that the applications for our unrestricted grants are extremely competitive, and we do sort of require, one of the requirements is, of course, that the services are being provided within Kenosha County. We give, I'm trying to think of some of, I don't have the application in front of me, but I know that we really value organizations that can collaborate together to provide a program or project. But yes, the application itself does ask a lot about what the program will offer, how it will be tracked, you know, who specifically it will benefit within the community. And I think the Unrestricted Grants Review Committee does a great job of kind of looking through all the applicants and comparing what they're seeing for answers on those applications, and then recommending to the board the best programs and projects for the community.
We were talking earlier, Amy explained that 5% of the invested funds are issued through grants. And is it kind of evenly divided between unrestricted and field of interest, or do you have specific amounts of money in mind before you start reviewing the applications, or is it based on what the requests are, then you decide how that 5% is distributed?
Sure. I'll jump in here, Marion, if that's all right. We have kind of anticipated between, we'll say 80,000, 70 to 80,000 for the unrestricted would go out annually. Our field of interest, actually, like cumulative value, is inching up to be similar in size. Actually, I think we issued about 70 grand last year as well out of our field of interest, because the ANVK, that one that for the seniors and homebound individuals, that was a very large fund. So yeah, I mean, just to give you a sense, we're talking in competitive grant cycles across the organization, you know, under 200,000, just around 200,000 between the CBK and our field of interest funds and the unrestricted annually through these competitive cycles, that is.
I don't know if this is, you know, an appropriate question to even ask, but I know in an organization I belong to, a state organization that issues grants, they do give some preference to the same organizations year after year, so that the organization can depend on that stable amount of money coming in. They still have to apply. They still have to meet the requirements. They have to report. It's nice if they can tweak the program and improve it. And I'm just curious, do you find that the Kenosha Community Foundation also gives the same organizations money year after year, or is it all over the place?
Yeah, I would think, you know, there's definitely some mainstays that we know are doing excellent programs. They may have an organizational fund with us, which we can talk about, which means they're already really planning for their future, and we look favorably upon that. But certainly we're looking, certainly over the last couple of years since Marion and I have been here, we're trying to sort of sophisticate, if you will, the application so that we can see innovation, we can see collaboration. You know, it's really looking at how do we maximize the impact of the funds that we have to distribute. And we see that we've got to kind of expect a little bit, I think, more on the innovation side, program innovation, where people are learning and adapting and not necessarily just providing year after year the same service to the community, the same service or program, if that makes sense.
Oh, it sure does. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned organizational funds, and I know from just past involvement, Mahone Fund perhaps is an example of that. Tell me about the organizational funds.
Right. Well, actually, just let me back up for one tiny second. So, Jane, when you asked about, you know, can organizations plan on those grants year after year, I would encourage, if we really want to support nonprofits, that donors would come to us and actually set up a different fund type than those competitive grant cycles if they really want to support organizations over the long haul. They could set up what's called a designated fund, where year after year, that donor intent is expressed in a grant, and it would be issued to the nonprofit irrespective of any competitive cycle. So that's called a designated fund, and we love those because certainly then the nonprofit really can rely on that, and then we don't have to feel like, wow, like we're boxed in on the unrestricted or the field of interest because we know this is a crucial nonprofit, but we can't see funding them, repeatedly for the same program.
So that would be separate from the grant applications that Marion was talking about, the five field of interest and the unrestricted. This is kind of a third granting operation?
Yes, absolutely. So we have what, I reference as these component funds and the community foundation. I mean, without trying to confuse the matter, the idea is that we are an extremely flexible organization for charitable giving. So the donor can come to us for really any charitable interest, and we have a lot of different tools in the toolbox, so to speak, to tailor the programming, the grant making to their interest. There's many different ways to slice and dice the grant making, but the competitive grant cycles is generally what you hear most about because we do all the press releases.
Sure. But if it's a designated fund, we might not hear about it because the donors have specifically set that up to support an organization year after year.
Correct.
Do you have a lot of those or?
Well, some of our largest funds are designated and it's quiet, but yeah, we're issuing hundreds of thousands of dollars to a stated list of organizations out of some of our component funds because the donor said, hey, these are the five organizations, three organizations that I know over the lifespan of the $1 million or so that I've, donated to the foundation, just go, just support them year after year. And I mean, that is a visionary donor. That is not only because we love to see people planning in, say, an estate plan or a will for long-term giving and transfer of wealth, if you will, after death, but it just helps that nonprofit plan in such a better way.
Oh yeah. And it's kind of interesting. We might as well, since we're already kind of segueing into ways people can donate to the foundation, probably a good time to do so. You had mentioned people getting together who have a common interest or a specific organization that they want to support. Why would they come to the foundation to make that happen rather than give directly to that organization?
Great question, Jane. Absolutely, because we love all kinds of donors, all kinds of supporters, all kinds of partners. And of course, financial contributions is just one way to exercise and express yourself philanthropically. Volunteering and all of that is so, so valued too. But, if people want to give direct to a nonprofit, go. I mean, please, all of our nonprofits need that direct support. Keep the lights on. you know, just pay their staff, hopefully, you know, give their staff raises, whatever that looks like. If you have a certain, you know, interest in just supporting that organization today, then go direct to the organization. Our community foundation offers like a very different kind of path to charitable giving because it's a much longer term time horizon. So say you had $10,000 that you wanted to give to a stated nonprofit, you could give that in a year and certainly they would be thrilled and expend those dollars. You could give $10,000 to us, we would take 5% of it and give it annually. So it may be a smaller gift, but the reality is it's going to go every year in perpetuity. That $10,000 is going to live for a very long time and certainly be worth far more than $10,000 when, you know, you stand back and say, wow, 50 years have passed. We've seen this happen where $20,000 is the establishing gift, and now the value of the fund is over $200,000.
And that's with the disbursements throughout Correct. Each of those years, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and I think that's it. There's a lot of the population that, of course, understands investments and how they can grow in the market and all of that. And there's a whole lot of folks who do not. And I'm just a little bit curious, too, about how much education you have to do to explain how you go about investing. And are you personally doing the investments, managing that, or do you work with, I don't know, I guess a broker would be the appropriate term?
Right. I mean, fortunate for us, I don't have to be an investment manager. I mean, we have some experts on our board that represent our finance committee, however that looks. I mean, Dave Gertzen, our board president, is a master at, served at the State of Wisconsin Investment Board, managing billions of dollars of pension funds. He's on our board. I mean, these guys know what, you know, what's what, and they're watching the market like a hawk. So there's definitely the expertise within the organization. I myself am certainly not tinkering with the investments. But the second answer to that is also we take in this foundation an approach to certainly lowering the fees of investment. It's a passive approach where basically we set the money in a balanced index fund, a mutual fund, and really we're not tinkering with it at all. Like it is stable, it is earning, and yeah, we're, like I said, it's not an active approach where we're, you know, managing it day to day, month to month. It really grows with the market in a fund that's very diversified. And like I said, that 60-40 split plays in. And yeah, so there's a lot to it. I've certainly come to the organization after 2 years to appreciate this is a very complex organization. This is a whole different ball game, but fortunate for me and Marion, we can bring our particular expertise to bear and then load up the bus with other experts to take on, you know, the roles that keep this whole place humming along.
Oh yeah, and I think I can appreciate now the complexity a little bit more after speaking with both of you. You have the grant cycles that you have to manage and try to make sure that organizations are aware that you're there and what you would have to offer. And I would think it's easier to let the same organizations know year after year the cycle is open. Do you do outreach to new nonprofits? I mean, how do you go about announcing all of that?
Well, Marion, for one, is, you know, working on our social media, our website, certainly trying to really give us some online visibility. But yeah, it is relationship building, certainly with this ANVK new fund that we have. I mean, this is just actually comes to us from the Kenosha Visiting Nurses Association. So if you're familiar with KVNA, yes, this is the reverse ANVK. But that's why the focus, of course, of the fund is for those that are homebound and disabled or elderly. But, you know, we have had to hit the streets and say, okay, where are organizations that are serving this demographic? Certainly, we've given a sizable grant to CAFASI, the Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services, Inc., which manages the Meals on Wheels program, which certainly meets the needs of individuals that are homebound. But we'd also love, and certainly the Kenosha Achievement Center meets people where they are as far as, you know, those with disabilities. And then there is an organization called Society's Assets that we didn't actually receive an application for, but they were in my office last week. I am actively like courting organizations, because of course we want to put these dollars to the best use, and we do believe that there's a lot of action in this space. It's just the organizations may not know these dollars are available.
Yeah, for sure. I can see there are so many funds and so many aspects, and you wonder, would I really qualify for this sort of fund or not with my program? So I'm sure you both spend a fair amount of time with potential recipients trying to figure out what they do and how you could match them or assist them in their service to the community. So now let's turn again to the donor side. We've come at it little bits by little bits that you might get an organization that comes together and does their fundraising to feed into your
endowment. Yes.
Individuals, it sounds like you'll take money from just about anybody who wants to support the community. So let's break that down a bit.
Sure. So what guides our foundation is really kind of upstream is the donor intent. We can't do the work of grant making certainly without individuals with charitable intent that have wealth, that want to say, I'm not going to buy a house down in Florida necessarily. I'm going to keep the money right here where I raised my children and where, you know, I myself, you know, grew a successful career, family, whatever that looks like. So, yeah, donors coming to us to express philanthropic interest, that is our focus first and foremost, because the rest of the machine doesn't hum if it doesn't, you know, doesn't have those resources come into bear. But there's a lot of different ways that people can come to us, different interests, and certainly the component funds are like a really nice way. Like one of the first things I talk about when people come to us is not only what they love, what might be their passions, what might be their favorite charities, but also how do you want to set this up for the long term? Do you want it to be what we call endowed, where it would be here, you know, forever, issuing 5%? Or is this a sort of notion that you want to spend down the monies, you know, in the short term or however that looks? If the gift is big enough, we can certainly look at doing what we call a spendable fund, which isn't endowed. But our bread and butter and focus of this organization is to be here forever. We've been here 100 years already. We are going to be here another 100 years if I have anything to say about it. So we need the endowments and we need the donors to come to us with a focus of their philanthropy that really will add value to this community for the long haul.
So what makes you decide whether to say, okay, why don't you take this amount of money and put it into one of the more directed funds or set up their own thing?
Right. I mean, it's questions. It's cultivating a donor to, I mean, many people will come to us and say, you know, I don't really know what to do, but I frankly, I do want to keep the money here. My children, adult children are all in a very secure place financially. So, you know, I don't need to pass it to my heirs. What do you have for me? You know, it's like, okay.
That's like, fair enough.
Yeah. Now that is very exciting because I certainly have a short list of my favorite kinds of funds, my favorite kinds of giving. And I mean, let's not forget, Jane, our foundation is a nonprofit itself. So if you love philanthropy, you love the idea of philanthropy in the broadest sense, set up a fund for our foundation itself so that we can continue to grow our team. I mean, Marion and I, and one other individual, like comprise, this is Jody Keene, our accounting specialist. We have a very small staff to do a lot of things, and I would love to grow this organization, but we need people saying, you know what? Yeah, I love what the Kenosha Community Foundation is about, and I want to support their actual like operating budget through an endowment. We've had three individuals do such a thing, and it makes all the difference in the world for us to be able to continue to do this work when donors say, we have a community foundation right here locally. Oh my, like it's just a beautiful thing. And let's keep it here. Let's keep it strong and let's keep it going, you know? So yeah, all that to say, there's a lot of different ways that donors can kind of come to us. We will guide them. We will help them. It's not like an overnight decision. Many of these relationships and conversations will take a decade, a generation. We've seen it where you have a conversation with someone and then they pass away, 30 years later, and we get this, sizable gift. It's a process and it's a role. It's an identity that takes time to relate to. And we're here to just support, run alongside.
And I think that that's probably one of the confusions too. It's like, I know in the future I want to contribute, and probably the Kenosha Community Foundation is a great way of reaching a lot of different organizations that I would support. But I'm not quite ready to hand over that IRA yet to you. How do you handle that?
Absolutely. Like it's certainly you decide every step of the way. The donor is in charge, of what they're comfortable giving. And it cannot, it could be over many gifts. I mean, some people start with, say, a donor advised fund, which is, just a direct way annually you select the nonprofit you want to give it to. And it's like not a lot of commitment to any given organization. Maybe you start that way. Then you say, oh, well, maybe I'll do a designated fund because this is an organization that's shown to be very responsible with their gifts. And, let's commit something a little bit more long term. And then, the queen of the, giving is unrestricted grant making, which is saying, things are going to change. This gift is forever, potentially. Let's endow it and really allow the community foundation themselves to say, oh, this is the emerging need or the great opportunity. So it can be, many gifts over many different, eras of thinking. And, it just allows people to kind of grow into the role. Like I say, it's a process. And, I think in a community like Kenosha, which has been, largely working class, blue collar, why would you give your money away? It's like this, I come from a farm. Marion also comes from Kenosha. You know, not these are not like, you know, hugely wealthy families coming up through the ranks, and we don't necessarily know how to relate to wealth, but the reality is it's, you probably be surprised what you end up with after a lifetime of work and saving. And let's talk and see, it doesn't make sense, you know, through a community foundation.
Great explanations about what you have going on, and hopefully we've triggered some interest about potential donors. If so, how do they go about contacting you, and what do you have meetings where you sometimes just in general explain, or do you prefer the one-on-one?
I think what I've seen over 2 years since I've been here is generally starting with a one-on-one conversation. I mean, we love like word of mouth, of course, if individuals can speak with their families and friends about us. I mean, we've been such a quiet company for so long. It's we aren't blasting out a message in like some large forum per se, because it is such a personal thing. And many people want to be discreet about their giving or even remain anonymous. We haven't really taken the approach of being real loud about it, which, you know, perhaps by design, but perhaps just because we haven't had the capacity to do more of that kind of outreach.
Well, I think somehow or another, the organization's done something right. If you're in the kind of position you are, 100 years and many millions of dollars being invested. We just have under 2 minutes left, but Marion, how can people find out about the grant applications? Where should they look? I would assume your website.
Yes. All of our applications are posted online on the opening dates. And as I mentioned, we currently have open the CBK Small Grant Program. That application will be open through January 27th. The next up will be our unrestricted grant cycle, which will open in March of 2025. And then the field of interest will be the final cycle for grants in June of 2025. Our website is kenoshafoundation.org. And beyond accessing applications, you can look around and get more information on ways to connect with us. You can reach out to us through our contact us link. We have our annual report posted to the website, which gives a bunch of information just about what's been going on at the foundation over the past year. It also includes a full list of all of our component funds. So you can see the different categories that are there, including the ones we talked about today. And we also break down grants and scholarships on their own pages. And so you can kind of walk through those and see what information is there.
Thanks, Marion. We've been talking with Marion Bothy, Communications Manager, and Amy Grile, Executive Director of the Kenosha Community Foundation. I'm Jane Herring.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
I'm Gregory Berg, and coming up on Monday's morning show here on WGTD, another conversation with Dr. Thomas Carr, Associate Professor of Biology at Carthage and Director of the Paleontology Program there. He will update us on some of the challenges facing the program and also talk about an exciting visit that he and several students made to the annual meeting of the Society of Invertebrate Paleontology. Join us for Monday's morning show, beginning just after 8.
Support for WGTD comes from the Business and Professional Coalition at Carthage College, inviting employers to learn how they can keep their data secure in the age of artificial intelligence. In this free luncheon and panel discussion on Tuesday, November 12th, 3 Carthage alumni will share timely insights from their experience in cybersecurity. That's Tuesday, November 12th. To register for the event, go to carthage.edu/AI.
WGTD HD, Kenosha Racine.